Bill Buckmaster. Hello, everybody. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on this Wednesday, August 9th, 2023. Tom, looks like the record of consecutive 100-degree days ended yesterday. I could be wrong, but I think the high was 99, which would give us about 54 straight days of 100 degrees, breaking the old record. The old record was about 39 straight.
They can have it. And you know what's interesting to me is it's August already.
I know.
How did what happened?
I know. We had an interesting talk about that, the whole summer and global warming and how it's going to affect Tucson with our historian Ken Scoville yesterday. As Ken points out, next summer, it'll be interesting to see if that's going to be the tipping point that a lot of people say I've had it. With Tucson, Arizona. Anyway, we're here in Tucson. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're going to take a deep dive into what's been happening with the University of Arizona and conference realignment as the University of Arizona leaves the Pac-12 with a lot of other schools, and heads to the Big 12. Troy Hutchison of GoAZCats.com is with us on the live line, and Troy has closely followed, I think you can call these historic developments, of the realignment. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Busy and very tired because it has been historic developments of realignment, and it's been nonstop for a year now.
Well, I'm looking forward to spending a couple of 10-minute segments with you. We've got a lot to unpack, and we'll save maybe for the second segment kind of an update on the football season and how things are going with the training for the new season. Troy, was the tipping point, from what we hear, the tipping point was the TV deal being so anemic? Was there another factor perhaps that we need to consider about the university that finally sent the University of Arizona to the exits on the Pac-12?
Yeah, you know, I think the original TV deal of 19.5, which the numbers were actually wrong. They were closer to $20 to $21 million, with Apple TV and it being mostly streaming service and having really to rely on subscribers for West Coast football to view your favorite team, that be Arizona, Washington, or any of the other Pac-12 schools. That was definitely a boiling point. I think President Robbins and Dave Hege, the athletic director at Arizona, gave the Pac-12 more than enough time. They gave them every opportunity to come up with a TV deal that involved one of the major stations, that be ESPN, Fox, NBC, Turner, any of those major providers, and they were unable to do so. Thursday night, it looked like it was a done deal last week that Arizona was going to be going to the Big 12, but then a change in the wind happened, and talking to some people, George Khalilkoff thought that he saved the conference, that he was able to get everybody back. Arizona was on board coming back, so was ASU and Utah. And Friday morning, they had a meeting scheduled to sign the grant of rights and reestablish themselves with the Pac-12 conference. But unfortunately for the Pac-12, two of the remaining nine schools did not show, and that being Oregon and Washington. Meanwhile, while everybody was meeting for that meeting of the Pac-12, they were in discussions with the Big Ten. A lot of, you know, into windows there of how that all laid out. But at the end of the day, with Washington and Oregon going to the Big Ten, Arizona with President Robbins, ASU and Utah informed George Khalilkoff that that's the straw that's broken everybody's back, that they just simply can't be part of a conference without Oregon and Washington in it. They didn't see a viable future for the conference. And after that meeting, they signed the deal with the Big 12 and announced the change of conference right after that.
President Robbins has really kind of been the point person on this, tremendous publicity. And a lot of the reporting I heard you on a podcast. I think it was with All Tucson Sports or All Sports Tucson. You were talking about some of the crazy reporting that people have been putting out in this effort to, like, oh, we broke a story. It's really been amazing to watch the inaccuracy, Troy.
Yeah, and you know what's sad is that back in the day, I don't think that would have happened as much, given that social media has grown. It's no longer about being correct about your report. It's about being first about your report in many regards, if you follow that model. And it gets you viewers. It gets you, you know, likes on Twitter. It gets you followers. And people have grown from that. But then the fans don't see the inaccuracy of it or refuse to see the inaccuracy of it. And even if somebody is tweeting out, you know, factual information like Thamel, like Ross Dillinger from Yahoo Sports, they don't like it because it's not what they've been hearing the whole entire time. But, yeah, it's just crazy to see. And, you know, it's unfortunate. But at the end of the day, even though some reports said that Arizona and Arizona State weren't going to be in the same conference, they didn't care about being in the same conference. At the end of the day, and President Robbins brought it up, was that they were moving swiftly together, side by side. Now, obviously, they wanted the best for both of their universities, but preserving that territorial cup game in football was of high importance for them.
Tucson and Phoenix have always, I call it the center of influence for our area, has been very West Coast centric, Troy. That's going to change. No conference games on the West Coast for the first time in 44 years. That's just around the corner. Our center of influence now will shift to the East. This is huge.
Yeah, you know, I think, but you also have back before even Black days for Arizona, when they were in the Border Conference, they were playing teams like Texas Tech for that were natural rivals of Arizona. Now, it's been a long time, you know, 44 years in the Pac-12, and being able to recruit the West Coast has really helped Arizona, not only in basketball, but football as well. But I think recruiting has become more national than regional. And when you look at the staff that Arizona has, even though you're right, the shift is more towards, you know, East and Arizona being in three different time zones, having that base that they've already, you know, established in Southern California, in Hawaii, and in the Polynesian community is going to pay off huge for Arizona in the future, because they're going to be able to keep those ties with trying to add the Midwest, the East Coast ties. Jed talked about Florida, how he used to recruit Florida back in the day at Michigan and UCLA. So he'll probably try to ramp that up. But it also opens the gateway to Texas, which many people remember that was one of Mike Stoops' pipelines of recruiting, was the state of Texas. So maybe it opens up even more opportunities for Arizona.
And we'll talk more about economic impact when we have Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham joining us for the second portion of our program at 12:30. But I'd like to get your take on that, Troy Hutchison, from GoAZCats.com. You're going to have a lot of people from some of these Midwestern areas, Kansas, Iowa State, who may want to make the trip out to Arizona. This might turn out to be a good tourism item for Arizona and Tucson.
Yeah, you know, I think it is. And when you really take a dive into it, back when Rich Rodriguez's first year happened, Oklahoma State came out, and Arizona Stadium was packed because of all the Oklahoma State Cowboy fans. Going back to that, Iowa for Mike Stoops, and I know that's Big Ten, but you have Iowa State in the Big 12, and they travel as well. Texas Tech, when Kevin Sumlin hosted them in Arizona, the stadium was pretty full too. Those fans travel. It doesn't matter if it's football or basketball. They travel. They follow their teams. And quite frankly, when you look at West Coast fan bases, that being Cal, Oregon State, Washington State, Washington, they don't travel anymore. It's not the same, at least from when I grew up. You know, West Coast fans traveled, but after covering the team for the past 6 or 7 years, the attendance has gone down drastically. UCLA last year had a non-conference game against Bowling Green, albeit not a great opponent, with only 4,000 fans in attendance. So it's been a little bit of a problem for the Pac-12 in attendance numbers and travel. But you look at the Big 12 and the Midwest teams, those fan bases travel. And when you look at the landscape across the Big 12, Tucson and Phoenix are going to be right up there in terms of destination spots. No offense to Ames, Iowa, or Waco, Texas, or even Orlando, Florida. I think when you look across the Big 12, Tucson and Phoenix are probably the more sought-after destinations for teams to get excited about, for fans to get excited about. It's different from the norm, from what they're used to in Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas, and gives them a chance to get out of the weather.
All right, when we continue with Troy Hutchison of GoAZCats.com, a little bit more on the conference realignment, then we'll look at the 2023 football season, the final season of the Pac-12 as we know it. Take a break right here, back with Troy right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line for all of our telephone interviews presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Troy Hutchison is the guy to talk to about all of the developments with the conference realignment. Troy covers the Cats for GoAZCats.com. So here we are. We've got the last time the University of Arizona be playing over at football in the Coliseum. And this we're going to have kind of the wrap-up of the Pac-12 football season. Some of your thoughts on that, Troy.
Yeah, you know, as a person that's not only covered Pac-12 events, also gone to them as a kid, it's pretty sad. You know, this conference has a rich history of over 100 years. Arizona, for them, it's 44. But, you know, just thinking about all the games that Arizona's played in during that time, at least on the football side, the leap by the lake in Seattle in 98, you know, Oregon versus Arizona in 2009 with a trip to the Rose Bowl on the line. Arizona lost that one in double or triple overtime, I believe. And so many games in football, Arizona for basketball, winning the national championship, the games against UCLA, that's all going to go by the wayside. I'm sure they'll schedule non-conference games versus Western teams like Oregon State, Washington State, maybe even USC and UCLA moving forward. But it's not going to mean the same. It's not going to be the same type of feeling behind it. And it's very sad, especially when you look at the cities. You know, I was talking to Bruce Pasco of the Arizona Daily Star about this. It's kind of like the country club of cities to visit. When you look at different conferences, when you think about LA, San Francisco, Seattle, and then even going into Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament, it's very something special to be a part of.
Well, you know, the travel is going to be an issue for the sports writers. A lot of these cities that you're going to have to go to a kind of a major city and then travel to the smaller towns, I guess. But, you know, you mentioned that triple overtime game. I think it was three overtimes. It was on national TV. It was Nick Foles. I was at that game. That was one of the best college football games I think I've ever seen in my life. Unfortunately, the Cats did not win out, and Oregon went to the Rose Bowl. But so how will this team be this year, this football team, Troy?
Yeah, you know, I feel the same sentiment that I did during spring football, is that Arizona's bigger, stronger, faster across the board. The recruiting classes are paying off. Seeing players develop like Jacob Manu. You have Justin Flo coming in from Oregon. So you're seeing depth at the linebacker position. They have 3-4 deep at defensive tackle right now. They're just bigger and stronger. And to me, it looks more like a Mike Stoops era team that had a bunch of NFL guys on the roster. This is the first time Arizona can say that since then. Now, it doesn't translate into wins, you know, right away. They're still very young, and the offense is going to be very good. The question is about the defense this season. But to me, this is going to be a 7-5 team, a 7-win team that probably goes to the L.A. Bowl, which I think is the Jimmy Kimball Bowl now, or maybe even something like the Vegas Bowl, somewhere around there. And to think about, you know, 2 years ago, it was a 1-11 team to being 7-5 in 2 years is a remarkable transformation.
All right, let's. I do want to bring up basketball and the Pac, or the Big 12. Arizona now gets into a conference that's really a very good basketball conference. How do they look in that conference, Troy?
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the old days of the Big East, or even the old days of the Pac-10, when UCLA and Arizona and Stanford and Washington were all at their height. I mean, when you look down the line, Kansas, Baylor, Houston, Kansas State, Iowa State's very good. And I'm sure I'm missing it. TCU is very good as well. I mean, it's just going to be a who's who of basketball. And now there's talks about maybe adding Gonzaga and UConn for basketball only to that conference as well. It's going to be very special. Tommy Lloyd's done a great job in Tucson and kind of dominated the Pac-12 conference along with UCLA. They definitely have the players. I think it's going to kind of tend to be a little bit of a change of, I don't want to say style of play, but just maybe an added toughness, because those teams all play defense, lower scoring games in the 70s. And it's great basketball. I'm personally excited for Arizona versus Kansas. That has the potential to be the replacement for Arizona UCLA. But it's going to be a very good conference and steady for a long time.
Does, on the football side, does Arizona fare better in a Big 12 football conference than in the Pac-12?
You know, my boss and I were debating this. He feels they're better off in the Pac-12 for football. I think they're better off in the Big 12. When you look at Rivals.com right now, the ratings for the recruiting classes that we have, Arizona's ranked 37th in the country for the 2024 class. In the Pac-12, that's somewhere around 6th or 7th. In the Big 12, that's second only behind Texas Tech. And just think how Arizona's been able to get the number 19 recruiting class and the number 40 recruiting class over the last couple of years. If they keep on this trajectory with recruiting and showing their development on the field, which they're getting bigger everywhere and just more skilled out there on the football field, I think Arizona is more than capable enough of winning a Big 12 conference, even more so than the Pac-12, when you don't have to compete with the Washingtons, the USCs, the Oregons, and even Utahs all together at once. I know Utah's coming over, but you don't have to compete with all that at once compared to the Big 12, who is losing Oklahoma and Texas, and Oklahoma State and Baylor really being the namesakes of the conference.
It's going to be so interesting, this kind of goodbye season, the goodwill or the goodbye tour for the Pac-12, because it's been called the Conference of Champions. Well, I think you could call this the Conference of Outstanding Quarterbacks in this farewell season.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's loaded top to bottom. The only school, really, two schools really that are question marks at the quarterback position are Stanford and Cal, and they were the lower teams in the conference last year. But other than that, everybody has a starting quarterback that has been an all-conference quarterback via transfer or wherever they've come from or have won awards at their other school. But it's highlighted by Caleb Williams from USC, and then it goes down the line of guys that would be Heisman contenders if this conference wasn't so loaded with quarterbacks and kind of cancels each other out. But it's a who's who of the quarterback group, and it kind of goes back to the days when Nick Foles and Andrew Luck were on campuses and you saw all those quarterbacks compete at a high level. To me, this is the best Pac-12, oddly enough, we'll see since that era, and maybe the best even since the Reggie Bush era, and it's going out with a bang.
Now, going back to our lead topic, the realignment, this really now accentuates, Troy, doesn't it, the have and the have-nots of college football? I think you could call the realignment, some sports writers are saying, it's what it really is a consolidation of the big boys.
Yeah, I think that is true. They're moving towards, I think, super conferences where there'll be two, maybe three super conferences with 30, 34 teams, and you're competing for a playoff, kind of like the Super Bowl in the NFL. Unfortunately for Washington State and Oregon State, even though they've been successful here as of late, just because of market, because of brand, they get left out in the dust. I do think Stanford in the long term will be in the Big Ten, either a couple years independent and then into the Big Ten or immediately here soon. But for teams like Stanford, they'll be okay. But Cal, Washington State, and Oregon State, it's really depressing for them. And I know a lot of people around the conference are saddened by it, but unfortunately, it's just how things are moving right now.
And in Corvallis, everybody was so excited, Troy Hutchison, about the new stadium addition that they, I don't know if it was a new stadium or a huge upgrade to what they have, but they were all excited about the future.
Yeah, and it's just something sad to watch because Jonathan Smith's got that program moving in the right direction. 10-2 last season. They get DJ Uiagalelei from Clemson coming over to Oregon State. And it looks to be like another 10, maybe even 11 win team for the Beavers. And, it matters, obviously, and they want to be the best they can be. But in the long term, they're not going to be considered a Power 5 team here shortly. And how does that affect recruiting? How does that affect Jonathan Smith there long term, even though he's an alumni there? It's just a lot of situations that need to be ironed out.
All right. Can you go through, we've only got about, say, a minute and a half. You said you think this is a 7-win program for the University of Arizona football. Could you kind of highlight what some of those teams will be, the 7 wins?
Yeah, I think NAU, will be one of those wins. UTEP will be another. Stanford, Washington as an upset in Tucson, ASU, UCLA, and the last one being Colorado. I think those are the seven teams Arizona are going to beat this season. Maybe even an eighth there with Washington State, but that's on the road. That's a very tough game. But those are the seven games I highlight as victories for Arizona.
And a mid-level bowl, you're thinking, even if it went to eight wins, a pretty decent bowl maybe?
Yeah, if it goes to eight wins, then you're looking more of the Sun Bowl and Vegas Bowl. Look, somewhere between seven and six, you're in the mid-level kind of lower-end bowls.
All right. Troy Hutchison, where can people find out more about you? Go to azcats.com. Is that the starting place?
Yep, for sure. Go to azcats.com, and also make sure to go to YouTube at GoAZCats TV and subscribe to our YouTube page for all the latest videos and updates around the Pac-12 and around Arizona Athletics.
Great job. Thank you, Troy, for joining us.
Have a good day.
All right. Troy Hutchison from GoAZCats.com. City Councilman Paul Cunningham is in the house. He'll be with me next after we take the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things 3384 East River Road. The folks over there can help you determine what should go in your garden that will give you some color and survive the heat. And hopefully with the rains do well for you. Because I'll tell you, my garden after the 2 1-in-100-year weather events in 2 weeks, that hail was really, really damaging to the garden. So I would suggest a visit to Green Things, greenthingsaz.com, their sister business on site, zocalovillage.com, for all that wonderful pottery, much of it from Mexico, the Talavera pottery. They have a huge selection. Green Things, in their 53rd year of business, they are open daily. Our live line, when we do our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And we thank Troy Hutchison for the first half of our program. What a knowledgeable guy about, he is the go-to guy about University of Arizona sports. He works for GoAZCats.com. And this situation with the University of Arizona, the realignment going from the Pac-12 or what's left of the Pac-12 to the Big 12, isn't just a sports story. It is a Tucson economic impact story. And we'll talk a little bit about that with the Ward 2 Democrat City Councilman Paul Cunningham, who won an overwhelming primary victory. I think more than 3 out of 4 primary voters said they like Mr. Cunningham and are willing to send him on to the general election. How are you, sir?
I'm really good, and it was a very humbling experience to get that type of support in the primary. And next thing.
All right.
What's next?
Okay. Well, what's next for the University of Arizona? We'll get to the council meeting, because there was a lot of that went on at the council meeting last night. But as I said, we had Troy visiting with us, and I want to get your input on this. And I brought it up a little bit with Troy about the economic development of sports generally. And when we talk about teams traveling to Tucson now from the Midwest, from Iowa State and Kansas, let's face it, and as we pointed out in the interview, a lot of the West Coast teams weren't traveling to Tucson. You had UCLA and USC alums that went that came to the game. Same with UW with Washington fans. You'd get some, but I think this could actually be an economic driver for Tucson. What's your take?
Well, there's a few things. I think that mindset, that I think there's a much higher interest per capita, a much higher interest index, if you will, in college sports in those communities in the Big 12 Conference. It's just the right mixture of demographics and people and community that works, and all kinds of different factors go into that. When you have a city or town with multiple universities, the fan base can be diluted. When you have a city or town with all 5 sports teams,
like the LA Basin,
It's diluted. If you have a town where there's all kinds of cooler other things to do, like you have scenic hiking and all this other stuff, which is one of the reasons that Tucson's actually struggled with minor league sports, is because we're actually large enough for some of the other towns, but we have so many other amazing things to do. So I think that piece is out there. I think the other piece that is out there is, if you live in Los Angeles where it's 72 degrees, I don't know, 300 days a year or whatever it is, you've got no reason to leave. You've got you get to go to the beach and so that's kind of that other piece to that. In the case with the Midwest, you know, it snows there. And in Tucson, it gets hot. And I think people are anxious to take a break once in a while and move around. So I think we'll have teams traveling better. I think we'll have more attended games. I think there'll be an enthusiasm index to this conference. I think it's also really important to focus on the idea that we battled really awful time zone situations where we were playing at 10:30 at night. Like the crazy kickoff times and things we had. And I think we're going to see some noon and 1 o'clock and 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. Football games
national
over the
TV
year.
Yeah.
So I think there's some time slot things that'll definitely kind of change the game, if you will. So those are all pieces that I'm excited about. I think the best is yet to come. And I think, when it comes to sports commerce, and I've been a big advocate for it since I started my career as a policymaker, which was finding that bridge that between the community and sports commerce and how to make that work. And we've had some successes, some marginal, some overwhelming. But the bottom line is that I really felt for a number of years that the Pac-12 was working against Tucson. to some degree. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, they weren't doing it on purpose. It wasn't a malicious or malintent, but we would go to Vegas. And we went a few times, but I just heard that Vegas would be like 80% Arizona fans. So the entire city of Tucson and our entire fan base would go, but none of the other schools would kind of pick that up and have that enthusiasm index. So I think that's going to change. Am I excited to fly to Cincinnati in the middle of the winter for a football game? No, I don't know if I'll actually do that, but nobody was really that excited to go to Seattle either. So I think there's a lot of different things out there. This is a very exciting time. This transition was necessary. I'm a little disappointed, again, with the previous commissioner and now the current commissioner, who I somehow still has a job. You know, that guy's getting paid $3.5 million a year, and he was supposed to get this
forth the Apple TV.
He was supposed to get this TV deal done, and that's what he was there for. And he didn't. He
really dropped.
He didn't do it, and now he's getting. And so that's the type of stuff that's what makes, you know, CEO salaries get complained about. Those are the things that drive people crazy. And so for us, I remember the previous commissioner, he at one of the Pac-12 tournaments, apparently he booked a room for $7,500 a night with a butler and stuff on the dime of the fans. And it was like, I don't care whether you think you deserve it or not is beside the point. The optics and just the absolute malcontent for all the people who basically, we had people in this town who saved up all year just to go to the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah.
And you couldn't make it so you could resell tickets, and you couldn't make it for this. And I just thought that was such a slap in the face to the fans in Tucson.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, and we'll pick up on this after the break, but what was kind of the marquee item last night on the council? Some important business.
Well, we had three big things last night, or four big things.
Well, let's plow into it.
So first we talked about tiny homes, and we're going to put together a package that I think not only is going to change, it's not only going to facilitate tiny homes and possibly do a pilot program for a shelter with micro shelters, which are different than tiny homes. Tiny homes have bedrooms and bathrooms in our homes. Micro shelters are just an air-conditioned room, may or may not be with running water and a more of a congregate setting.
How many square feet for a tiny? What qualifies for a tiny
home? I think we're going up to 400 or up to 450. It hasn't been truly kind of fleshed out yet.
Okay.
But so that's the start, and we're trying to figure out, do you delineate between tiny homes and mobile homes? Do you allow tiny homes to go onto C1s right away? What are the setback requirements? Are we going to change the parking requirements, which we probably should? You know, in mobile home parks, the mobile home park setbacks and designs and density requirements are set up so people can drive their car into their mobile home.
Of course.
For tiny homes, we want to possibly have just congregate parking on the perimeter, and you can walk. Walk. It'd be more for the pedestrian type folks. So that was the first one. Then the second one we had Kevin Dahl, Councilmember Dahl from Ward 3, had a couple constituents had a really awful experience with towing companies, and he said, you know, let's put some pieces in where, hey, if you walk out and you don't know where the heck your car is, at least the sign should say the number you call. And
I would think, you know, so. Where's my car? And who do I call?
And at least you can call and somebody will answer. So that was kind of the aim. And I thought that was pretty reasonable. I know there's a couple towing companies that are a little bit frustrated right now. We're going to iron some things out. I think they'll be able to recruit a central calling service or something like that. I think we'll be fine. If you've got somebody on the clock at 2 a.m. towing a car, then obviously you've got somebody who might be able to answer the phone. So I think there's some pieces to that that'll work, and we'll figure out how that all goes down. But I think it was a good thing to ask. You don't want people angry just because they get their car towed.
Okay, that you said those. Then there was a third item.
The third item was my item with Councilwoman Santa Cruz. We put together a program to talk about sober living homes, and this has been going on for almost 6 months. We had a contingency of folks around the state, really, that were taking people with access or with a tribal service ID, and we're bringing them into quote-unquote sober living and billing up to $130 to $700 a day and kind of just enticing them and then exploiting them so they could get paid. through some work we did in Ward 2, we uncovered a couple places that might have been in that category of defrauding people. And we took action, and a couple, the activity, you know, decreased, but it started to prop up again. And we said, you know, let's take a look at having an ordinance. Phoenix passed a sober living ordinance that can help us regulate, that can assist access. The Kyle Sawyer from Access was at the council meeting yesterday. He did a great job explaining kind of how they revamped their procedures a little bit. They've actually shut down 200 of these sober living homes in Arizona in the last year who are operating under very nefarious pretenses. So I'm real proud of that thing. We also had an amazing and very powerful presentation from the Tucson Indian Council, and they did an amazing job talking about kind of how this white banning has affected the Native American community, not just in Tucson, but across the state and across the country.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Paul Cunningham after the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Good getaway if you want to cool off. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Upper 80s right now over there, and the overnight lows mid-60s or so. So very pleasant weather over there. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, southwestnewmexico.org is a good starting point for their website, which has all sorts of ideas about what to do and where to stay and where to dine in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Paul Cunningham continues now his conversation with us, the Ward 2 Democrat. We had on the city and county coordinator for homelessness on our program on Monday. And according to the latest survey, I guess what they count unsheltered people, Tucson is actually holding steady or actually going down in the homeless population.
Well, I mean, it's too early. I mean, from 2017 to 2022, everybody tripled their unsheltered homeless numbers. And that was around the country. Tucson was no different. From 22 to 23, a lot of different cities increased their numbers. We actually went down. We went from like 1678 point in time count to 1501. And then our number of homeless people, households experiencing homelessness stayed about the same because our number of sheltered homeless went up. So though we had unsheltered homeless go down, we had sheltered homeless go up.
And we are getting people into temporary housing, right?
We're doing even better than that. I mean, we've taken 732 people who were unsheltered homeless into permanent housing in about 18 months. And that's a statistic that I love saying because no one's doing that fast. Houston actually was the only city that was really making progress at that rate. Mm-hmm. And we're keeping up with the Joneses with Houston as far as that kind of service. There's some other pieces. You know, you need a large continuum of care. You need different. There's homeless shelters are not one size fits all. Some people have families. Some people have pets that they don't want to leave, and it's a barrier for them to come in. Some people obviously suffer from substance abuse issues, but some people suffer from mental health issues. Some people have completely other issues. I just met someone this week that has a very solid job history and spent two nights in the car with their children, and I said, let's see what we can find out, and let's see what we can figure out. And happy to say that right now that family has a placement.
They were in a car with two kids. It was
a family with their kids, and they were in the car for one or two nights. And so we were able to get them placed, and that's what that's for. But there wasn't. But everybody assumes, okay, that's mental health, or that's this, or that's that. And in this case, I don't think that was it at all. In this case, I think it was 100%. Just a couple of bad luck moves, man. Like, just it
can happen.
A lot of people have no idea that there are so many folks we have in this community who are 72 hours away from homelessness, or 2 weeks away from homelessness if they lose their job or whatever. And we just got to understand that. And yes, we have mechanisms, but we do not have a catch-all. So when we think about all those things that go into homeless shelters, we have all those different types of folks in all kinds of different, some of them are in their 60s, some of them are in their 30s. Like I said, some of them have kids, some of them don't. Some of them have a partner, some of them don't. But then you get into another thing. They all want different things. Some people need rehab and they need kind of a very structured thing. Some people don't really want that. They just want to be able to kind of come and go on kind of no questions asked. They may not have some substance abuse mental health issues that they just, they're people, they're what you and I would have called hermits or hobos back in 50, 60 years ago.
This is a lifestyle choice.
It's a lifestyle choice, and they're pretty functional. They work odd jobs. And then you've got other folks that they really just, they need to feel safe. So when they're in a congregant setting, they don't feel safe. So those are, we have to have that continuum of care. Finally, we have people that are transitioning. Those are folks that are coming out of incarceration or have been in the legal system. A lot of them are registered. I mean, and again, one of my mentors is Ann Nichols, and she was one of the
late Ann Nichols.
Yes, and she was an incredible social worker. She was a drive. She was a force of nature when it came to understanding the mission of social work in Tucson, Arizona. And one of the groups that she actually advocated for, and it's hard to, because you can't do it without cringing, but she was very important to say, hey, look, somebody has to at least say there has to be an avenue for registered sex offenders to live somewhere and to do something. And she was very vehement about that. And I appreciated that because that was something that a lot of people just didn't even want to go. But that's the job in social work.
Is there now a transition when people get out of the jail? Do they go to a home?
Well, they've got a transition center that Pima County's setting up, but there was definitely a gap. And again, with the sex offenders, it's very hard for them to be able to find a place that will lease to them and find a place that is far enough from certain children and stuff like that. Yeah. So you get into those pieces, and that's like your regular count. That's the people that were pretty much struggling with either being unsheltered or sheltered homeless and can't find permanent placement forever. And latch that onto the folks who came out of the pandemic and really didn't kind of find their feet again. And that's kind of what's where we're at in this country right now. And it's not just anywhere. There are, according to Wikipedia, which is not the perfect source, but there's a good 37 cities with over 1,000 person encampments, just one encampment of over 1,000 people. Oh. And Tucson has none of those, and we have a pit count of 1,000 total, all of our camps. So
the tier system, Mahi explained that to our listeners on Monday. There's three tiers. It's controversial, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. But it's not, it's necessary. The bottom line is that we'll get an encampment that is pretty harmless. They're quote unquote not harming anybody. They're cleaning up. They're doing the right thing. And then that encampment will get a bad actor or two or three. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden that camp is not in a tier one encampment. It becomes a tier two. And then somebody gets hurt or somebody is committing crimes out of that encampment and it becomes a tier three. And it isn't, again, this is one of the things about the whole discussion. Like if somebody says, there'll be a person who will advocate for homeless advocacy, for shelters, for helping people find housing, and then they'll be victimized by a crime and they'll want somebody in jail. But they won't say they want that person in jail forever. They'll say, I want that person for so many days so we can figure out how to place them and set them up for something successful. And that's the model we should be looking at. The problem is that we're really, the system for that is unwritten. No one's really ever kind of tackled it that way. Nobody's ever looked at it that way. We have to continue to look at it holistically. My background at juvenile court, that's exactly what we did. We looked at kids, and it wasn't the Department of Corrections or Punishment. It was that rehabilitation model. Everything was rehabilitated for juvenile court. And actually, the real cool thing is the question should have been back then was, well, we got this really awesome rehabilitative and scales of justice model for juvenile court and juvenile delinquencies. Why don't we have it for adult court? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of where, I think that's where we're headed. I mean, pretrial services was set up, believe it or not, by Jonathan Rothschild and then my uncle Horace, but who also passed away during COVID. And they set pretrial services up through Dennis DeConcini's office through a grant in the 70s. And so I'd love to see us kind of retool that and bring that back where your case officers helping with that rehabilitative model. I think it can help us with the homeless thing. I think that's one of the pieces that I know that the courts are working on, the county's working on it, but I think that's where we're headed. And ultimately I'm really confident we're going to have a comprehensive both justice system, but also for community wellness, for social justice, and for sheltering people.
All right, we'll let you get back to school. How's school going the first?
Great to be back. The kids are amazing. We're just so optimistic with everything going on, and really proud to see the enrollments where they are. Also, some record numbers for kids participating in extracurricular activities throughout the East Side. And so we're really happy with all those things.
All right, Paul Cunningham, good to see you. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right, we'll take it to 1 o'clock, and then we'll have CBS Network News. Dave Ramsey, his very popular show on money, is coming up on behalf of Councilman Cunningham and Tom, engineering and producing the show. It's Bill Buckmaster wishing everyone well.